community support project known as HSP. If you've been listening to WPFW, you're aware that Haiti is on fire with gangs threatening to seize power. HSP is hosting a forum for leaders of the Montana Accord movement in Haiti to discuss the urgent need to organize to compel the U.S. government to respect the sovereignty of the First Black Republic by supporting a Haitian solution to the crisis. Thursday, March 21st, 7 o'clock p.m. at the historic Metropolitan AME Church, Washington, D.C. Doors open at 6:30. Free and open to the public? That's a forum on the crisis in Haiti. Thursday, March 21st at the historic Metropolitan AME Church. For further information, visit the website ibw21.org. That's ibw21.org. For the love of Haiti, I'll see you there.
To turn it around, if we all could love one another, all the world could be as one. Just take time to love one another, all the world could be as one. Black man, white man, standing together, no more fighting to be done. Yellow, red man, dancing together, all the world could be at one.
Good morning. This is Joni Eisenberg, and we are about to start our 32nd anniversary show. And I'm here in the studio, and hopefully Chuck Hicks is with me. We're having a little technical challenge, but that's nothing new for us. We've been here for quite a long time. Welcome, Chuck. Chuck has been the co-host with me since about 2011. And so good morning, Chuck. And I want to make the announcement. As many of you know, our own Dory Ladner left us physically a few weeks ago. The family is officially announcing that the memorial service for Dory will be Saturday, March 13th, Saturday, March 13th at 11 a.m. at Shiloh Baptist Church. Stay tuned, and I'm sure it's going to be announced coming up in the future. We are going to be doing a quick run-through of the, 32 years that we've been on the air, and if you multiply 32 times 52, I think that's over 1,600 shows. So we're not going to be talking about all the shows or even the highlights, but we are going to be lifting up several key issues which still impact us today. And one of those is our healthcare system. I'm also joined by our original host, co-host with me, or she was the host, I was producer, Michelle Tingling Clemens. Good morning, Michelle. I'm so happy to have you with us. And Lucy Murphy, we're also going to be hearing from her, the great vocalist. But we're going to start right now with a group called In Process. And they actually produced this song when we first started 32 years ago. And they hurried up and recorded it last night. So here is some of the members of In Process singing Healthcare for the People.
Healthcare for the people. Healthcare for the people. Healthcare for the people. Healthcare is for people, not for profit. Healthcare for the children. Healthcare
Welcome back. That was the first song that we played. It was probably for the whole first entire year. And thanks to Pam Rogers, who later joined us as one of our producers for the show, and her family. And welcome, Michelle Tingling Clemens. Michelle and I would like to add a verse that we are very passionate about. And that was originally we included health care for the workers. And of course, we're also very concerned about health care for men. And as we talked about it in the beginning of the show that we started 32 years ago, D.C. has some of the highest rates of health problems and lowest life expectancy for black men in the country. But in terms of workers, and Lucy Murphy is here to encourage and cheer us for remembering that today, March 25th, 1911, I think it was a Triangle Shirtwaist fire where approximately 145 women died because the owners of the factory locked the door so they could not get out when there was a fire. And we've talked about that many times on the radio. Unfortunately, the issue of dangers and hazards at the workplace is still very much with us. But we want to give that shout out that Triangle Shirtwaist fire today is when it happened. I believe it was in the afternoon. And Lucy also reminded me that it was 1991. That was another horrific fire in Hamlet, North Carolina, where about 25 women, again, were killed in a fire because, once again, the doors were locked. And we talked about that many times over the airwaves. And actually, one of my poet friends, Gaston Neal, did a poem about Hamlet, North Carolina fire. But we're going to keep moving here. We have a lot to cover. And my dear friend, Thomas Blanton, texted me to say I made a mistake. And Dory's service is April 13th, Saturday, April 13th at Shiloh Baptist Church. And people are welcome. It's going to be 11 o'clock, and you will hear it more on the radio, I can assure you. So thank you, Thomas Blanton. Thomas Blanton's wife, Hassani, was part of the original group that Michelle and I started actually 40 years ago. And 40 years ago, we started an organization called Heal DC, and we were focused on the issues, healthcare crisis in the nation's capital. We actually had a huge town hall meeting in, I think it was 1984. We had about 500 people attending an 8-hour session. We covered a lot of the issues that we still cover today. And that was an organization that Hassani Blanton was a member of, Iris Adora Lee, and we decided at some point that we were going to shift the organization into being a radio show, and that was in 1992. And I'm going to thank Thomas Porter, Tom Porter, who was the general manager at the time. who inspired us and inspired me in particular, as well as Michelle, to approach Tom and see if we could start a radio program. And I can still remember vividly Tom Porter on the radio talking about the first Gulf War. And Tom talked about it with such compassion and such anger at what the United States was doing. And I thought, well, if he can talk like that on the radio, maybe I can get on this radio station. And my friend Gaston Neal encouraged me to meet with Tom. Michelle and I met with him. And he said, okay, well, come up with the first 13 shows you're going to do, and we'll see how it goes. So we did, and actually a lot of the topics are still the topics that we deal with today. Michelle, are you there with us? Okay, she'll eventually jump on. I think we're still having some issues. But I'm going to talk about some of the early years that we started the show. We're going to be focusing a lot on DC General a little bit later in the show, but I do want to say that we started this show with the understanding that public hospitals were an endangered species, and certainly so many decades later, most of the public hospitals around the country have been shut, and certainly DC General was shut down. We're going to talk about the struggle to keep it open and some of the factors behind the powers that be that made sure that DC General was shut down. So we're going to be talking about that a little later. We spent a lot of the 90s talking about DC General. We had one of the unions that represented physicians at DC General. The Doctors Council was on often, and I can just remember very vividly going to meetings with total African-American physicians at DC General in meetings for years and months and months and months trying to organize to keep that hospital open. But in addition to the hospital, I'm sorry, everyone's reminding me. It was April 13th is Dory's tribute, not March 13th. So another thing that we did, in addition to dealing with DC General, Michelle and I were looking at the whole problem of healthcare in this country. And as we've been saying for decades, the United States has one of the poorest records, even just in terms of life expectancy. I think we're number 38 now. And it keeps getting worse. So what we did in the beginning, those beginning years, is we really brought in some healthcare heroes to talk with us. And one of our initial guests was somebody by the name of Dr. Paul Cornelli. I always say he should be a household name. He was the first African-American to be the president of the American Public Health Association and was right here in Washington, D.C., opened up the community branch of Howard Hospital and was also in the forefront of trying to keep D.C. General open. So Michelle and I decided and this was with support of Tom Porter. We brought together some, I'm going to call them healthcare heroes. And hopefully Michelle will jump on to remind me of some of who those people were. But we were actually produced not only on live on the radio, but this wound up being on C-SPAN. And somewhere Michelle and I have that tape. And some of the people who were on the C-SPAN show included, I mentioned Dr. Paul Cornelli. It's also worth mentioning Dr. Jesse Barber, who is also a hero. He's the one who really encouraged us to start this radio show. He was at DC General, at Howard for many, many years, and at DC General. He was a professor. Later in his life, he became a professor of social medicine, and he worked with us in what was then Heal DC. So he was part of those healthier heroes on C-SPAN. We also had Dr. Quentin Young, who was Dr. King's physician.
Recording in progress.
Dr. King's physician in Chicago. But he was also later the founder of something called the healthcare Medicare for All or single payer, which was another way of saying we need universal health care in this country. We also had Dr. Helen Rodriguez Trias on this C-SPAN program. She is another Shiro that led the battle from New York City to end sterilization abuse. And we're going to, Michelle, can you jump on and add some of the other people who were on that C-SPAN program?
Good morning, everybody. We had Congressman John Conyers on. We had Quentin Young on, the head of what
Michelle,
was
yes. then speak right into the phone.
Physicians for a National Health Plan, but also a healthcare hero in his own right. I think Helen Rodriguez Trias.
Yeah, I just said on. All those. Yes. Yes.
We had the representative from UCAN, whose name I honestly don't remember. UCAN, United Health Care.
Yeah, that
for
was
all
one of
now,
the.
Now, I think it was.
Right. So, unfortunately, we got to keep moving here, Michelle. So, we just were sharing that Michelle and I had a long history of talking about the healthcare problems in the nation and in the city before Michelle moved on. And then eventually, Brother Bay came and was the co-host with me for quite a number of years before he passed. And then Chuck came on. So we're going to be moving quickly through these years. I wanted to bring on, before we move to Jeremiah Lowry, let me just say that another one of the things that we covered a lot in our early years, as I mentioned, was healthcare issues related to workers. So this is where Chuck Hicks comes in. And Michelle and I for years talked with the sanitation workers who was if people could mute your phones, I'm hearing some background noise. The American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees, D.C. Council 20, which represents the largest number of workers in D.C., we had the sanitation workers, Ask Me members, on for years talking about the problems that they face, not only picking up trash, but also in the sewers and on and on. We spent a lot of time with them. And one of the things we did, again, thanks to the support of Tom Porter, we actually had a rally. A big rally with the sanitation workers, and that's when Chuck and I first met. So, Chuck, I don't know if you want to jump in and remember that real quick. Well, maybe
Chuck,
not.
You have to unmute.
Yes.
Yes, yeah. I do, and that's where we met Morris Tosin, just a whole bunch of brothers and sisters there, and it started a real great connection between us and Ask Me Council 20, James Ivey, just a whole number of people.
Yes, and Chuck, describe though, it was a huge rally. There was
a couple of hundred sanitation workers there, and it was just tons of people there impressed, and Joni and I ran into each other, and that's how we started. And I was president of Council 20 at the time.
Yes, you were. And so, again, thanks to Tom Porter, who supported us in that we broadcast that rally live. And that was, again, in the 90s. And we continue to have these sanitation workers on at least once or twice a year. And we also connected them with the sanitation workers in Memphis. And as many of you know, that's where and why Dr. King was killed, because he was supporting the striking sanitation workers in Memphis, where basically did not allow any black people to be in the union and didn't even allow a union. So anyway, that's some of our history. We're going to jump in now to a young man who we were pleased to have on for quite a while back over 10 years ago, Jeremiah Lowry. And Chuck and I both know Jeremiah well, and we are very proud of him. Native Washingtonian, and contributed a lot to the community, and still is. And he just won a big national award, which he's going to talk about. So welcome, Jeremiah.
Joni, how's it going? It's been a long. Has it really been 10 years?
It's been a while. We haven't been in touch. That's why I'm happy to have you on this morning.
Oh, my goodness. That's just been way too long. And I'm really excited to be on, and I recognize some familiar names, folks that I've had the blessing of, you know, being able to work with and organize with over the last few years.
Yeah, so we're going to start with you. Just tell us briefly the award that you won. You won an award for National Advocacy.
Oh, yeah, you know, a National Advocate of the Year, you know, through the American Bicyclists Association, League of American Bicyclists. And, yeah, it's a national award given out to an individual who's, done a lot for transportation policy, in their community. And so I'm really thankful. And I know, like, everything is every individual award is also a community award. So I really appreciate the community around me who is always organizing to make things impactful for everybody. So
yes. And I apologize for having to move quickly, but when you joined us in those years, you were doing a lot of work around food justice, around a lot of more stuff. So just share with the listeners, first of all, real quick, the food justice issue that brought you to the table. And I think Chuck also remembers things you were working on then around minimum wage. And so just real quick, take us through some of those things.
Absolutely. It's just, you know, it's so much. You know, I think over the years, I've had the blessing of being on the DC Food Policy Council, you know, working with Common Good City Farm. We had a youth internship program. We were able to hire a bunch of young people to build raised beds at senior centers across Washington, D.C. You know, we've taught hundreds and hundreds of people how to garden. You know, we've given out free produce. We had a free CSA program for seniors and residents who weren't able to leave their homes. You know, we've just done so many workshops, too, on how to garden over the years. And, you know, we've also talked a lot about, I think, over the years, the labor piece, too. You know, so ensuring that food workers, have fair wages. You know, I was one of the individuals that filed the ballot initiative that passed twice. Voters passed it twice in Washington, D.C., to give tip workers a raise. We won that campaign when nobody thought we even had a chance.
That's
you
right.
know, but we let the people speak, and the people voted, and they made their voice heard. And so that, you know, higher wages are here, and will continue to come for a lot of workers across Washington, D.C. So I'm really proud of that.
And we're really proud of you. Chuck, I don't know if you want to add anything about Jeremiah before we unfortunately have to move on, but we are very proud of you. Native Washingtonian, born and raised in Anacostia, very much a part of this community today. And we're going to try to keep you, work with you more in the years coming up.
Jeremiah, what are you looking at to do in the future? What are you doing in the future that's of interest to the community?
That's a good. Well, I'm looking to work with Joni, and I'm looking to work with you on some food stuff. You know, I think I'm looking forward to that in the future. Going forward, I would love to maybe do different art exhibits, maybe write some books and stuff of that nature. So I have a lot of things that I'm, you know, coming down the pipeline, and I'd love to come back on and discuss it at some point with you and Joni. So
we'll do that with you.
Yeah, we're definitely going to stay in touch with you, Jeremiah, and welcome your new baby into the world. We plan in the future to be working more with youth around food issues. So we're definitely going to be in touch with you, Jeremiah. And you're welcome to stay on. I'm sorry to keep moving fast, but we're going to be spending most of the rest of the show talking about issues related to D.C. General. And hopefully Reverend Wilson is going to be joining us on the line soon. But Lucy has a song, and we're going to again, as we mentioned, the struggle for DC General went on for over 15 or 20 years before the powers that be successfully shut it down. And I must say, and Michelle will back me up, as you know, these so-called public health people like to do all these data and studies and whatnot. There's never been a study about the impact of closing DC General. And I'm going to ask Michelle, some of the issues in DC are getting worse, and maternal mortality is now up on the top issues in DC, which it wasn't that before. And I know, Michelle, you gave birth to a beautiful young man who later became a young man there at DC General. So you can testify to the good care that they gave you and many other women.
Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, I went there because I was very unhappy at the facility that they were assigning me to. Plus, I was having a fight with the insurance company. So I wound up having no insurance and having to apply for Medicaid, and which I discovered like how brutalizing and how disrespectful that process is. But I had a wonderful experience at DC General. People were very concerned and caring. I even told them what the issues I'd had with at George Washington, and they were very supportive of my interests and wishes. But I think that the issue that you were talking about in terms of data, I mean, that continued. I remember we were doing an emergency committee to restore seniors' prescription drugs because they cut seniors off from the district's free medication, a pharmacy program, when they privatized it. And so we went to a community forum, and after we kind of took over the meeting, they had a new health director there, and they kept giving all of this data that they were talking about how they had improved things. And then we had to fight with them to get them to admit that the data they were talking about all came from DC General. They didn't have any other data to present. But they were doing a comparative issue with DC General without ever mentioning them.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, I think that the real impact of the loss of DC General has been huge. Almost all the doctors in DC trained in emergency medicine at DC General. Mm-hmm. DC General was the main hospital of, it wasn't just last resort. In many cases, it was really the first, because it was such an outstanding hospital. But we didn't realize that it was part of a national plan to eliminate public hospitals and whatever we had learned in terms of public health care and its importance in terms of the overall health care in this country. So, I mean, I think that there has never been an assessment. I mean, we can give our own assessment from the work that we've done, but I don't know if we can count on this system.
Oh, no, they're never going to do that. Hey, look how many years it's been. But we're going to, one of the organizations that came to be, and we're going to be hearing from Vanessa Dixon Briggs in a little bit, was an organization called Healthcare Now. And they put up a big fight along with others. And Lucy's going to sing some of the song.
Healthcare Now came out of the Center for Community Change. And a number of our local activists were very key in Healthcare Now. And we decided that we needed a song. So we took Sia Humba, which is a nice tune from South Africa, and said, "We are gonna win with Healthcare Now. We are gonna win with Healthcare Now. We are gonna win with Healthcare Now. We are gonna win with Healthcare Now." And of course, if you are at home, you can make this song better by singing along with me. We must keep the hospital open. We must keep the hospital open. Keep the public hospital open. Keep the public hospital. We must keep the hospital open. We must keep the hospital open. DC General, DC, DC General. Keep the public hospital open. DC General, DC General. Keep the public hospital open.
And you can finish that, and Lucy's going to finish this song at the end of the show, but we want to Welcome, Reverend Willie Wilson, Union Temple Baptist Church, and actually one of my heroes. There are many reasons why we invited him on today. He's going to be sharing some D.C. General stories, but I also, as some of you may know, Reverend Wilson was very close to Marion Barry, and we are proud that Marion Barry was a frequent guest on this show over the many years. So welcome, Reverend Wilson.
This morning.
It's great to hear you. And a little later, I'm going to ask you a question about Marion Barry and where we are today with our current leadership in this city. But let's start with DC General. You have your own stories about DC General and the fact that this was definitely a plan by the powers that be to close the hospital. So wherever you'd like to start, Reverend Wilson, is fine.
Well, you know, we had on a regular basis, I think every week for a long period of time, we had rallies at Union Temple to save D.C. General Hospital. And in fact, because of that, I was contacted. In fact, the former mayor at that time, Anthony Williams, sent some of his people over to the church and said, well, the mayor wants to come and share his views on closing the hospital. I said, well, you know, he should know that I'm opposed to the closing of the hospital. He said, oh, no, he knows that, but he wants to come anyway. So he came. And dear sister, I cannot call her name now. She's made her transition.
Barbara Sizemore?
No, not Barbara at this point. Uh-huh. It was the head of Our Father's Children Center in Southeast. She had had a heart attack, and she got up and talked about how she had to crawl on the ground. And Anthony Williams got up, and he said, well, I don't care what happened. I'm going to close this hospital. The insensitivity of that statement made me stand up, and I just said, this man is evil. And of course, it wasn't planned, but the people stormed the platform at Union Temple, and his people had to take him out of the back door of my office. After that, he had given me this low tag. He took it back and posted an editorial talking about how childish that was, and he tried to give it back. I told him I didn't want it. But, you know, we fought valiantly to save that hospital because it was so important to so many people, particularly east of the river, in terms of getting care, and we fought for that. Of course, as you mentioned, Barbara Sizemore, I was also part of fighting for, along with Abinah Walker, who just transitioned a couple of weeks ago, and some others, and we had a rally at the church, at which she shared a letter that, or rather a paper that she had written. She wrote a paper titled Accommodation or Education. In that paper, she talked about the fact that D.C., way back 100 years previous, in 1874, had black leaders in place in district government, including Frederick Douglass and Solomon G. Brown, and that the federal government had put together policies designed to show that black leadership was inept and inefficient by creating a budget deficit, they did, 100 years previous. She said the same thing is fomenting right now. She was speaking in 1975. She said the federal government has just let a raise to police and fire in the district, putting the district in the position of a deficit. She said that's the first step in an effort to prove the current leadership, that is Marion Barry and other blacks who were on that city council, as inept and inefficient. And so then after that, then they passed those laws to and give an increase in salaries to police and fire. And because of that, she also indicated that she had intercepted a note from two council persons that was dropped on the floor by mistake. And the note said to one council person, these were white congresspersons, I'm not congressperson, city council person, mm-hmm. said to one, the one said to the other, we will take this city back, but it will take us about 30 years. Is there anything else you need me for before I leave? And so she said, well, the die has been cast, but since we have so many former civil rights leaders, Frank Smith and Willie Hardy and Nadine Winter and so on and so forth on the council, maybe this time it won't happen. But, of course, obviously, we saw that the same thing happened over again in terms of proving the city officials, Marion Barry and other council persons to be inept and inefficient and finding reasons to remove them from office so that they could be about the business then of taking over the city.
Yes,
so
with the help of the FBI.
Big Biden.
With the help of the FBI, who paid a lot of money to make sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm sorry to cut in, but we're going to jump back with Reverend Wilson in a moment because we're going to ask him where are we today in Washington, D.C., now that Marion Barry is not with us physically, but of course, he's still with us in spirit, and we remain very proud of him. But I want to bring in now Vanessa Dixon Briggs, who's also been a part of this show and actually now serves on the board, local station board of WPFW. But back in the day, in the 90s, Vanessa was very involved with an organization called Healthcare Now. Lucy sang that song, and we'll end the show at the end of the song. But welcome, Vanessa.
Good morning, everyone. Reverend Wilson, Michelle, morning. Lucy, Joni, everybody. Chuck, hey there.
And I'm sorry that we don't have more time, but just take us through a quick run through Healthcare Now jumped into the struggle in the 90s while the struggle had already been going on for at least 10 years or more to save D.C. General, as Reverend Wilson described. And again, as I mentioned, the black physicians were in the leadership and community people were trying to save it for quite a while. But then the organization called Healthcare Now jumped in. So share with us your story about D.C. General's closure.
Okay, sure. I'd be happy to do that. So I just want to, I've been listening to all that you all have said, and you've laid such a context and background. I just want to add one thing in terms of, I don't know if people really understand what a public hospital is and the importance of it and the specialty of it, is that it has a mission to serve everyone regardless of ability to pay. And because of that, it's serving uninsured people. It's serving the very young and the very old, those in our society who typically are the spreaders of disease. So historically, public hospitals serve an extremely important purpose socially to prevent the spread of disease. DC General in particular is located on 64 acres that was designated by the federal government land grant, which its purpose and mission was to provide health care to the poor. That's the purpose of that land. Can't say that's happening now, but that's a different issue. And so the significance of losing an institution like a public hospital, especially in D.C., if you look at D.C., it's shaped kind of like a little triangle. And if you divide it east to west, you'll see that almost all of the hospitals are on the western side of the city. They're on the healthier, wealthier side of the city, all those hospitals, GW, Georgetown, Hospital Center, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. When you look on the eastern half of the city in East D.C., at the time D.C. General was open, you had just two hospitals. You had D.C. General and you had Greater Southeast. So Greater Southeast was all the way on the far, far side of the city, really kind of like right by the Maryland line, not that easily accessible. And you had D.C. General, which was on the metro and by the river, and it was just strategically located. And it also was a level one trauma hospital. That was the big deal. Level one trauma deals with penetrating wounds, heart attacks, strokes, auto accidents, gunshots, et cetera, et cetera. That was extremely important, and it provided quality medical care. For example, there was once a shooting on Capitol Hill in which five or six policemen, Capitol Hill police officers, were shot. the ones that were taken to another hospital across town on the healthy, wealthy western side of the city, they did not make it. They all perished. The ones who were taken to DC General because of their expertise in dealing with those types of healthcare issues, they all survived. So that's just a small example of what an extraordinary institution it was. World-class physicians, highly, highly trained, who were committed to providing healthcare to all, regardless of ability to pay. And so,
Vanessa, let me just jump in for a second. In addition to what you just said, the quality of maternal health care, and Michelle just testified, for pregnant women, and we had for decades a Dr. Michael Young on, who's one of our sheroes, and now Washington, D.C. has the highest rate of maternal mortality.
Wow.
So that's just another thing that we need to remember about D.C. General.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So in terms of healthcare now and where it and I, for example, as part of that group, entered into the D.C. General struggle, like you said, a decade or so after you and Michelle and others had already been in the fight, struggling to save the hospital. I wasn't even really familiar with DC General before I started working for a union, which was the late 90s, about 98, 99. And when I first started, I started hearing this rumor that DC General was going to close. And so I'm, running around, oh my God, it's going to close. And nobody was really listening or believing that, because DC General had been around for about 200 years. And there had been so many efforts previously to close it, and all of those efforts had failed. So it was thought that it couldn't close no matter what. So I think if in terms of takeaways, I think one thing for us all to be aware of, especially if we're in a struggle, in a campaign for justice, is to never believe that an essential social institution can't be destroyed, because it absolutely can. We should never underestimate the power of the enemy of the people to shut down the institutions that serve us. And so about a year later, it became very clear that then Mayor Anthony Williams, and he was supported by the control board. I don't know if people who remember the control board, Congress had put into place this panel that had more power than all of the elected officials, more power than the mayor, more power than all of the city council. So it was Mayor Williams, the control board, who were fully implementing a plan to close the hospital, although Anthony Williams had initially said he was not going to close it. He said that when he was running for office, but then once he got into office, that plan materialized. So that's another lesson in terms of, being careful of listening to the false promises of politicians, especially when they're running for office, what they say when they're running as compared to what they do when they get elected. And so I had just started working for a union. I was representing the resident physicians at DC General, and all of the non-management employees at DC General belonged to a union. There were several different unions. And so all of the unions came together when it was finally crystal clear, undeniable, that there was a threat to the hospital. We all came together, but our expertise was representing members, whoever our members were. That was our expertise. So what we found is that we did not really know how to save a hospital, what to do. So there was a person, Emily Young. I don't know if you remember Emily Young.
I'm sorry to say, Vanessa, we're almost out of time.
Oh, dear.
So
okay.
Wrap it up.
Let me fast track. And so then Emily brought to us Howard Croft, who had saved the hospital. He had saved Greater Southeast. So he had the knowledge of how to do that. But what he really brought to us was an understanding of how to work in coalition together. And so we put our individual differences aside. We came together. We formed that coalition, Healthcare Now, which started with the unions, expanded to the community, people who were affected and just people who cared. That went into the anti-war community. and those activists. And I'll say one thing about what the anti-war community brought to the DC general struggle was the understanding that it's all one fight. It's whether it's happening in DC, whether it's happening across the country, whether it's happening across the world, that it's all one fight. It's one fight against the corporate mindset, which is operating the same no matter where we are. And so we came together. It was a mighty fight. There were many protests. There were many press conferences.
Hearings.
Representative Conyers very graciously through Joel Siegel, his staff.
Okay,
allowed us to have many hearings. There was the involvement of the ministers through Reverend Hagler, Reverend Wilson, allowing us to use the church. There was so much involvement from so many, and it was a valiant fight. But unfortunately, we lost that. We lost that hospital. And what should have happened was at least a study of the people who used the hospital afterwards to see what the impact was. But that did not happen.
Right.
But we know that people have died. We can document some deaths that
they're
have
not going to die. I'm sorry, Vanessa. We're out of time. But Michelle and I worked inside that health, so-called public health department that we had, and we even had the director of the health department secretly tell us that he was not in favor of closing the hospital, but he was given his orders that we had to follow. We had a Dr. Michael Young, who it should be nationally known as a neonatologist, who stood up and screamed and shouted to the rooftops, if you close this hospital, we'll be coming back 25 years later talking about the babies that have died. And this city has never, ever addressed it, period. They closed the books, and we watched the numbers get higher and higher in terms of our life expectancy rate and on and on. I'm sorry, but we only have five minutes left
to try to cover.
Thank
you,
Vanessa,
for covering it.
Okay,
making
Vanessa,
it part of your celebration.
I'm sorry, Michelle and I and Reverend Wilson. I want to make sure we give him some time before we leave. We have about 5 minutes left, and Reverend Wilson, as we know, we think back on Marion Barry, who, when Marion Barry was with us, we had somebody who was trying to do the best for the people. And we know that the FBI pumped millions of dollars to make sure that he wasn't allowed to stay as mayor. But share with us some of your thoughts, Reverend Wilson, about where we are today with our leadership in the city and how we might be able to continue. And you are continuing Marion Barry's spirit as we move forward.
Well, you know, the sister said something just now a few months ago that was so important when she talked about political officials when they have to get elected. You know, politics is a ugly, ugly, ugly business, and it makes people often take stances and positions that they don't really, really believe in. But in order to get elected and to stay in office, they proposed things. Marion Barry was not like that. He was a gatekeeper. I remember when gentrification was just beginning to rise in this city, he made the statement, this is going to be the biggest robbery since Jesse James bank robbery, you know, in terms of what was about to happen. And of course, we all, some of us stood trying to make a difference. But Marion was one who, regardless of what others thought, he was so clairvoyant in terms of seeing what was going to happen and going on, and refused to bow down and was the gatekeeper, as I said, to block efforts to rob and destroy the black community, and did all within his power to make sure that did not happen, you know. And of course, what Dr. Sizemore had said in 1975 came to reality when she prophesied what would happen or what might happen, but that she hoped wouldn't happen, because we had seasoned civil rights leaders who knew the ropes, so to speak. But that notwithstanding, they were able to get rid of him. And thus then, when they did so, we lost, in terms of the political arena, a great advocate for the people and a gatekeeper to block certain efforts that were designed to continue to subjugate and oppress our community and our people.
Absolutely. And Reverend Wilson, we all want to thank you for the support that you gave Marion Barry over the years and continuing his spirit. I don't know if you want to briefly mention when they made sure that Marion Barry was locked up. You made sure that people from the community were able to visit him over the years. So we thank you for everything that you've done.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. Thank you so much. You know, when he was first, when he went to prison, you know, before he went to prison, when he went to the court, I set up a tent outside of the courthouse and had prayer all day, every day, while the proceedings were going on. I lived to see one of the news reporters came out there, and he said, he literally cursed me out, only to be fired and taken advantage of on the TV station he was working on. And he came back and wrote a book on racism, and that's what I helped him to promote it. But those are the kinds of things that we had to deal with during that period. You know, again, it's about, as Marion took stands, I and others like him, us, took stands that were not popular because they were popular in terms of doing what was right so far as the people were concerned.
Absolutely. And if you had a word to say, where do we go from here in terms of trying to save this city or save lives? And of course, we know we will have you on again. You gave a very powerful statement on Roach Brown's show last Tuesday about the crime bill. But if you can just and by the way, our own Reggie Robinson, cardiologist, member of Union Temple Baptist Church, we wish he had time for him, but he's enjoying listening to you, Reverend Wilson.
So, oh, Reg.
Yes.
So good to hear.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm, great man.
Yes, he is. So your final word, and I'm going to also ask Michelle to jump in as well for her final word. Where do we go from here? What would you like to say to the residents of D.C. and the DMV about how do we save, bring back?
Well, one of the things, you know, much has been done by the oppressor to destroy a sense of community here in the DMV. You know, it used to be a time, of course, when we had WOL, we could go on the air and make a call and say, gather, meet, do this, do that, and hundreds, and if not thousands, would gather immediately. We don't have that now. We don't have, and in fact, a lot has been done to destroy our sense of community. And that's something that we've got to work to recover. It's not an overnight proposition. What is in place, what is happening, took 50 years, almost 60 years to be put in place. It's in action. It's moving, and it's going to take a concerted effort of many of us who will stand together to kind of turn some things around. And that must happen because we look at what's happening in our communities with our young people who have not received what they need to receive in terms of the direction. I think a lot of the adult community has to understand that we have failed the young people, and we have to reclaim them. They are ours. They come from us. Many of us have determined that they are our enemy. They're not. They are our children, and they're angry, and you would be too if you had been robbed of your fathers, going from something like 300,000 incarcerated in 1970 to now over 2 million, and the list just goes on and on. The infant mortality rate, so on and so forth, are the direct products of the times and what was done, planned, orchestrated, and didn't just happen just by itself without the concerted efforts of those who were determined to take this city back.
Absolutely, and we thank you so much, Reverend Wilson, for what you continue to do. I'm looking at my phone now. Beautiful picture of Reggie Robinson, physician, member of Union Temple. Beautiful picture where he shows 100 black men of Greater Washington. And so we're about out of time. We want to give Lucy a chance to sing the rest of her song, Vanessa. Thank you so much. Thank you, Chuck. Michelle, if you have 20 seconds.
I do.
Real quick.
I do. Uh-huh. I just want to say that I just want people to remember that the earlier story that Reverend Wilson told about that note that somebody dropped on the floor, was too lazy to pick up on time, that talked about their 30-year plan to undermine D.C. and take it away from Black people. I want people to understand that none of this is by accident. Mm-hmm. And then when Vanessa talked about fighting against the enemy, we have to understand that we are fighting a system that has been organized not in our interest, never in our interest. And so now as we listen to the stats and how much worse the conditions are for us in terms of health care, and how now D.C. ranks number one in maternal mortality at a time when it's been found that Black women suffer more maternal mortality disproportionate to our percentage in the population. We have to understand that this is a fight for our lives.
Absolutely.
And that we understood that when we started this program, healthcare and the interest and healthcare interests in the nation's capital, because no, everybody was talking about national stuff, okay, but they never talk about D.C. as a community.
Yes. Yes.
So we have been
Michelle,
fighting that idea
like
ever since we started.
I'd like to say to you and to everyone who's concerned about health in D.C. that we have the One D.C. Black Workers Center at 2500 Martin Luther King Jr. Avenue and a health committee to work on these kinds of conditions,
yes, we've been
and
working.
Issues. And we have a One D.C. Black Workers Center chorus, which rehearses on Tuesday night. If anybody would like to learn this song, you can give me a call, 202-234-8840, Lucy Murphy. And
I don't know. We have time for a
We are going to win with health care now. We are going to win with health care now. We are going to win with health care now. We are going to win with health care now. We are winning, winning. We are winning. We are going to win with health care. Health care now. We are winning, winning. We are winning. We are going to win with health care now. Single payer is the way to go. Single payer is the way to go.
Diverse City Fund is a grassroots grant source for change makers of color in the nation's capital. We fund social justice work by and for DC people of the global majority. Apply online now, no later than Friday, March 29th, by going to the website www.diversecityfund.org. You can send email to info@diversecityfund.org. Upcoming info session dates and past recordings are online to answer all your questions. See www.diversecityfund.org or call 202-743-0130. That's 202-743-0130.
Diverse City Fund ofrece subvenciones para agentes de cambio de color en la capital de la nación. Financiamos el trabajo de justicia racial y social por y para líderes de color en D.C. Solicite una subvención en línea hoy al más tardar el viernes 29 de marzo, visitando el sitio web www.diversecityfund.org. Fechas y horarios y grabaciones de las sesiones informativas pasadas están en nuestra página web. Para preguntas, visiten www.diversecityfund.org o llamen al 202-743-0130. Eso es 202-743-0130.
The best in live music entertainment is coming to Bethesda Theater. Rick James, Stone City Band, will be performing all of their greatest hits with singers who look and sound like Rick James and Tina Marie, Saturday, April 20th at 8 p.m. Also coming is Music Royalty. The Whispers will perform all of their classic songs during two big shows on Friday, April 26th at 8:30 p.m. and Saturday, April 27th at 8 p.m. And on Mother's Day, Howard Hewitt will perform his own popular songs and those by Shalimar for two shows, Sunday, May 12th at 3 p.m. and 7 p.m. Rick James, Stone City Band on April 20th, The Whispers on April 26th to 27th, and Howard Hewitt on Mother's Day, May 12th. Get more information on all shows at BethesdaTheater.com. WPFW is a proud media partner with Bethesda Theater.
This is Dr. Ron Daniels, founder of the Haiti Support Project, known as HSP. If you've been listening to WPFW, you're aware that Haiti is on fire with gangs threatening to seize power. HSP is hosting a forum for leaders of the Montana Accord movement in Haiti to discuss the urgent need to organize to compel the U.S. government to respect the sovereignty of the First Black Republic by supporting a Haitian solution to the crisis. Thursday, March